Blog Talk Radio.
The streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is August 11th, 2010. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us each Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes. As we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues, we have a great show for you tonight. Our guest is Shaka out of Detroit, and we'll hear more from him in just a few minutes. And before I welcome Boyd to the show, I would just like to give a big shout out to my nephew, Trayson, who just spent 6 months at the Aravaca Boys Ranch in southern Arizona and just graduated Sunday night. You know, he spent 6 months down there getting his life in order, and we just want you to know that we're really proud of you. And, you know, if you ever need anything, we're right here for you. And with that, I'd like to welcome Boyd.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank everybody who tunes into the show every week. And I would like to just say it's a blessing to have one of my hometown brothers on the show tonight, Brother Shaka in the house tonight. And he's ready to bring it to you live, living in color, to let you know the streets definitely don't love you back. You know, the brother spent 19 calendars up in the cage. Now he's coming out here with a blessed mind, blessed heart, to teach the youth and others about what's really going on. So without hesitation, we're going to pass the mic over to my man Shaka to formally introduce himself, and let's get the party started.
Thank you, man, for the fine introduction, man. You know, it's really a blessing to work with good people, quality people, especially just coming home after serving 19 years in prison. You know, and the reality is the streets really don't love us back, you know, and I had to learn that the hard way, like many of our youth that's headed down the same path I was headed. And what I'm out here trying to do right now is kind of curtail them from taking the same steps I took, you know, that led to me being, you know, sent to prison, you know, 1 month into my 19th birthday.
Dig that. So we're going to get right into the groove, and we're going to ask Brother Shaka to let the people know what led him to the prison life. But we're going to go way back before we get to that. We're going to ask you, Shaka, how did you get involved with the street life, or the hustle world, and all of that, and what led you into that as a child, and where you grew up on the East Side.
Yeah, I grew up in a neighborhood called Harper and Chalmers. You know, it's kind of one of the strongholds of the crack era. You know, the Chambers brothers, Best Friends, you know, notorious crack, you know, crews that came up during the mid-80s and early 90s. And what led me into the streets, you know, my mother and father, they got divorced. They basically got separated when I was like 12, and you know, eventually they led to divorce. And in the midst of them separating, you know, my mother, she became very disgruntled, very abusive, and she began to take her anger out on me. You know, and I was, at the time, I was, you know, an academic student, you know, all A's and B's, honor roll student, well-respected, you know, and admired by my teachers and students alike. And when the abuse really began to escalate, you know, I just realized that, you know, I couldn't take it. And I fled our home, you know, thinking that, you know, by fleeing, that I would be going into a safer environment. But what I didn't realize is that I actually went into an environment that was worse than what was going on at home, because as a 13-year-old teenager, I was, you know, introduced into an adult world, a very negative, distorted adult world. And, you know, and at the time, you know, I was kind of an impressionable, you know, teenager, you know, and I looked up to the guys who was in the streets because they were the ones who told me that they would provide me with clothing and a place to live, and without really realizing that they was providing me with a, you know, fast trip to get to the penitentiary, you know. So that's how I got into the game at the age of 13, at the age of 14. You know, I was robbed at gunpoint in a building on Jefferson and Chalmers, which is, you know, as you know, Robbins is like a notorious for, you know, drug trade in Detroit. And at the age of 15, you know, one of my childhood friends was killed. At, you know, 16, my brother shot my other brother in the neck. So, you know, I was introduced into a very volatile, negative world, you know, and lifestyle. And like I say, Flint, yes, sir.
Right, yeah. So, yeah, you was down there, on Jefferson down there. You was down there, Big Ed in them territory at the time.
Right, exactly. Yep, Big Ed, yep.
Yeah.
All the legendary street dealers, you know.
Yeah, no doubt, you know. You know, when I was in that era, you know, I ran with Cliff Jones and Maserati and Demetrius and you know, BJ and them, you know, when I was running my era at that time, you know. Sonny Bono, which you know Sonny was one of my comrades that ran with me in the Warner kind of projects when I became the boss of the 430 crew in the early 80s.
Right, without a doubt, the legendary Parkside project, no doubt.
Yeah. So what led you to, you know, going to the joint? Now, let's go up to that point. Now, what led you all the way up to that point? Because, you know, as you stated to the people, you already got out of control when you got introduced to the game at a young age. So you realized that step one, that was not what was happening. As time went on, when you had a chance to really sit down and let this bit sink in, you know, that now these calendars finna start rolling, and now I got to really take responsibility for my own actions now, you know what I mean? Because there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide now, you know. It's mess hall, child, and yard right now, you know what I mean? So it's no, we finna go out and chill out and eat some Coney Island right now. That's gone.
Without a doubt. Leading up to me going to the joint, at the age of 17, I actually had moved from the east side over to the west side and over there on Puritan off Southfield, but my sister stayed down in the neighborhood known as Brightmoor, which is, you know,
right
down past, yeah, right, you know what I'm saying? So I ended up moving on what turned out to be probably the most infamous crack block, you know what I'm saying, in Brightmoor, if not on the west side of Detroit, called Blackstone. And I moved over there. I ended up, you know, getting back into the game, selling, opening up spots. And I got into a conflict with a guy over something that wasn't directly associated with the selling,
right,
but the mentality that we both possessed was a direct result of the lifestyle we was living at the time. And so at the age of 17, I got shot while standing on the corner. And when I got shot, I went to Mount Carmel Hospital, which, as you know, is the hospital that Maserati Rick was actually killed in.
Exactly. Wild Drive over there.
Right, exactly. And so that hospital is notorious for just, you know, passing the gab and kicking him back out on the block. And so what ended
right,
up happening is, right, like what I didn't realize back then, what a lot of, you know, parents and a lot of teachers and mentors don't realize is that a lot of teenagers that grow up in cities like, you know, Detroit, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Flint, you know, they suffer from post-traumatic stress syndrome. And when I got shot, they never asked me, like, did I need to see anybody, did I need to talk to anybody. They just basically passed me up and kicked me back out. So at 17 years old, I just experienced, you know, this trauma to my body and nearly having my life taken. And so psychologically, you know, I began to transform my thinking, you know, and it was like,
right,
okay, now I have to carry a gun every day. And before I allow somebody to shoot me, I'm going to shoot first. And so 14 months later, I got into a similar conflict with an older man, you know, and this was a drug-related conflict. You know, I refused to sell them drugs because I didn't know him. A guy that I knew brought him to my house, but I didn't know him directly, and so I refused to sell him drugs. We got into a conflict. We exchanged words. The conflict escalated, and then he made a threat that he would do something to me. And in that moment, I had an opportunity, and this is what I try to tell all the youth, is that there was a moment of clarity where I had an opportunity to walk away.
Right.
I made a decision based on the fears that I had allowed to take root after I got shot to, you know what I'm saying, I allowed that to make me make a very poor decision. So instead of walking away, I chose to shoot first, and it caused somebody their life, and that's something I can never replace, you know what I'm saying? Like, and, you know, that's like the hardest thing to deal with even today, and this is 19 years later, you know what I'm saying? That I've done something
right.
That you can't go back and change that. You know what I'm saying? Like you can steal something from somebody, you can go pay them back or, you know, something like that. But once you take a person's life, you can never replace that. You know what I mean? And so
right, that's gone.
Without a doubt. You know, and you know, so really it was a double tragedy, if not a quadruple tragedy, because in addition to his, you know, him losing his life and me losing my freedom, both of our families suffered great losses. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So in the process of that jumping off, Shaka, you know, now that the motor case is over your head now,
right.
Did you get picked up right away or did you go on the run or how did that moment move?
Yeah, I went on the run and this is the beauty of the name of your show, because this is another thing that I try to really get across to youth now, because everybody talk about street credibility. Everybody talk about keeping it real, and everybody talk about sticking to the street code. But in reality, you know, guys have lost respect for that code a long time ago. So, you know, of course, I was living that lifestyle, so I wasn't trying to own up to the responsibility. So I tried to, you know, I went on the run, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to get away like any bandit or desperado would. And
right. In
the process, my best friend, you know, the guy who I was selling drugs with, the guy who, you know, I had got into numerous shootouts with, the guy who, you know, I ran to have his back whenever he was having an issue or anything going on, he turned me in. You know, he basically ratted on me, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
that's when the reality of the streets don't love you back really hit me, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is a cat that I would have put my life on the line for, you know what I'm saying? And
right.
at the first sign of pressure, he broke. Turned me in, you know what I'm saying? I got arrested a couple of days later, and, you know, so that led to me going through the court system.
Right. And just to speak on that, Shaka, you know, when I have these speaking engagements with these kids, man, you know, I tell them the ins and outs of the game right off the top and let them know, okay, you trying to be this famous drug dealer, and you trying to be this thugged out guy. You get what I'm saying? But what you ain't being taught by the elders or the flip side of the game, my brother and sister, that there's no 401K, there's no retirement plan with that game. It's two retirement plans with that game, brother, and that's the penitentiary or death, brother. And many have tried that job. And if you ask any man that done been in them shoes, he will tell you, if he's living to this day, he will tell you that, brother, I didn't even win. Either I'm broke, or I'm strung out on drugs, or I'm just coming home after a 20-year bit because they gave me my freedom back. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I let them know the penitentiary can be either for rent or for lease. And if you rent, that means you got to outdate. You got to outdate if you just rent. But if you're leasing, that means you'll be getting out with the cement boots on Cherry Hill. If you lose,
don't get it.
And then, though, like you say, though, there's no guarantees on ever getting out.
Exactly.
Even if you
exactly.
are just renting, there's no guarantees.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the things, like, I actually almost didn't make it out, you know what I'm saying, because I ended up catching another case while I was in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, I caught another case while I was in prison, because my original sentence 15 to 40 years for the second-degree murder and then two years for the gun, the same as your son.
Okay,
so that's
17 feet.
Yeah, and then the second case, I ended up getting sentenced to 23 months to 4 years, and then I served 4.5 years in solitary confinement.
Right. So when you got sentenced, Shaka, when you got sentenced and the judge hit the hammer, You knew you was going. Ain't no mystery about that, correct?
Right. No doubt. It was go ahead.
But the mystery of the whole thing is you didn't know whether you was gonna come out alive or not. Is that fair to say to a brother?
Oh yeah, ain't no doubt. you know, everything we I had learned on the streets about prison was, you know, this is a no man's land, you know what I'm saying? And like, this is where, you know, all of the legendary killers and you know, street bandits, this is where they exist, and only the strong survive, you know what I'm saying? And you know, going in at 19, you know, I'm like, I'm going into a adult world, a very hostile world, a very aggressive world. It's, you know, it's testosterone-driven environment. And so, you know, I'm like literally froze because I'm like, man, what to expect? My life is over. And, you know, you can only imagine, like, for me at 19, I had never been locked up no longer than, you know what I'm saying, in a couple of months, you know, and you know, so I'm like
back
trying
on
to
the
project.
Block.
Right, yeah, you know, I'm trying to project down the line that's, you know, basically half of my life, you know what I'm saying? Like, I hadn't even lived, you know, nothing but 2 years past what I was sentenced to, you know what I'm saying?
Right, and you looking like 2000 and, huh? You know what I mean?
Right,
you couldn't
right.
even see that far. You
right,
couldn't even see that
far. Right, exactly.
Right. Yeah, you
know,
couldn't
this,
even
this
see. 19... Man said 2000 and some change, and you looking like, whoa. This is 9-1. You know what
exactly.
I mean? I don't
yeah.
even know if the world going to be here in 2000 and some change.
Exactly. You know, then the tragedy is, you know, I had a daughter who was 3 months old at the time, and then my son's mother was 6 months pregnant. No, actually, she was 3 months pregnant. She was 3 months pregnant.
So you didn't even get a chance to see your seeds grow up.
Right, exactly. You know, when I watched them grow up through prison bars, you know what I'm saying? And currently my son is locked up as we speak right now. My son is down in West Virginia, locked up, waiting to be extradited back to Detroit.
Wow, man. Now, how did that make you feel, Shaka? You just coming to the spot, man, after trying to clear your head over this 19 calendar bit, and you hear that your man is trying to, you know, run that same race, man. How did that hit you, man?
I mean, it was crushing because, you know, I worked, you know, I actually produced a children's book called Building Bridges along with a few other guys that's locked up. And basically, the book was designed to really bridge the gap between children who have incarcerated parents. And the motivation for the book was the relationship I have with my son. Like, my father, no matter what prison I was at, you know, my father, he tried to make sure that my son came up and visited, and I talked to him, I mentored to him. When guys would come home from the penitentiary, I would send him to my father's house to, you know, get my son and talk to him. You know, my fiance, she would take him to, you know, different environments. So, you know, just to take him out of the hood. And so literally,
right.
like, right before I came home, I got a call. No, I actually called home and found out my son was locked up, man. And I'm talking about it just crushed me. Like, here it is, I'm this big, tough, you know, penitentiary street legend, and I'm sitting on the phone crying like a baby because my son is, you know what I'm saying, has chosen to follow the same path that led me to, you know what I'm saying, serving half of my life in prison. So, you know, it's crushing, man. It really is.
Right. So today, man, let's talk about your book, man. You know what I mean? Crack, you feel me? Let's get into that a little bit. And tell the people how the book Crack came about, and we want to dig into that a little taste.
Okay, yeah. Like reading, when I came to prison, man, reading was really my saving grace, man. I can't say that enough, man. Like, you know, one of the things that you know from your experience, I'm quite sure from talking to your son, that prison is basically designed to crush whatever humanity a person has left when they step through the doors. And I was blessed, man. I was really blessed, man, that early in my bit, a guy, he was a writer. He used to write his little books on a little prison stationery to make up little stories about the neighborhood. And, you know, it was my way of going back to the hood. You know what I'm saying? I mean, these would like literally be just books stapled together. You know what I'm saying? Handwritten. And after reading a couple of those, he introduced me to Donald Blum's work. And so I started reading
Donald
Blum.
Oh, yeah,
Donald
that's
Blum.
Man and jump. Yeah.
No doubt. You know, that's mandatory. That's part of, like, the rites of passage when it comes to literature. You know, so I got off into Donald Gorms, and, I mean, I just devoured his whole library, everything he wrote, you know what I'm saying, I read. So what happened after that, though, was that I desired to read and to learn more. And so I started reading
right.
stuff like Malcolm X and Marcus Garvey and, you know, all of these great
like
historians
and all that.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? Like all these great, brilliant black writers. And so, you know, I ended up writing a little bit for the prison newspaper because one of my guys worked for it. He was like, well, you're fairly intelligent, you know, write me a couple of articles. Long story short, everybody kept on telling me I need to write a book because I, you know, I was articulate a little bit above average intelligence for the prison environment. So people used to be like, you need to write and share your story. And so I started writing. And actually, Crack is the third novel I wrote. And what I learned from my experience, the first novel I wrote is really, it's real cultural, it's real political, real spiritual. And it came across the guys as kind of preachy. And so what I did is I stepped back for a minute. I said, okay, well, let me see what these guys reading so I can actually reach them on their level. And I noticed they was reading Donald Barnes and then some of the newer authors out like Sister Soldier, Terry Woods, and Vicky Stringer, and, you know, more of the little urban street list stuff. So I said, well, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to write a book that connects to their everyday reality, but I'm going to have to drop these jewels of wisdom in these pages. You know what I'm saying? And so I came up with the idea to write this book called Crack. And it's a murder mystery that takes place in Detroit. It starts from the east side, goes to Highland Park, comes back to the west side. And what basically what happened is this detective is trying to start a murder of a childhood friend. And what he realizes is that the people who he think is responsible for this murder aren't the people, you know, the typical hood drug guys is not the person that's really responsible, you know what I'm saying? And so in addition to it being a title that kind of grabs guys in the street, it's also a metaphor for the thinking that takes place in today's society, you know what I'm saying? It's kind of like we had this crack psyche, you know what I'm saying, that allowed the birth of the crack epidemic to take place in the first place, you know what I'm saying? We have a crack political system. We have a crack police infrastructure, you know what I'm saying, in the city of Detroit and Cincinnati where they, you know, it's okay to shoot young men in the back now, you know what I'm saying? So I kind of deal with a lot of the politics of the streets, but at the same time still entertain people and still take them deep inside the inner workings of the hood.
My man, and we got one call for you, Brother Shock, on the phone, 734 area code. We're going to take that call, and we're going to have them ask you a question if they need be before we go to a commercial break.
Okay, for sure.
Hello, caller, you're on the air.
You there, caller? Hello? I guess they still there. They probably just sitting back just listening in tonight. But what we're going to do, we're going to take a commercial break, and we're going to go to the song, The Streets Don't Love You Back, after we do the commercial break. And we're going to come back with my main man, Shock Out of Detroit, with the new book, Crack. We'll be right back with you in a few minutes. Hold tight.
The one thing I regret the most is beating my mom up in front of my brother. Because just to see the sadness in his eyes, he used to say things to me, he's like, I look up to you, and then him seeing me beat my mom up just like really hurt me, because it's like he looked up to me and look at what I did in front of him. What kind of a role model would do that in front of their brother? That's the one thing I regret the most, is beating my mom up. My name is Bernadette. I am 15 years old. It makes me feel bad because I treated my family like dirt. I didn't care about them. Nobody else mattered. And I used to get violent when I was on meth, especially when I was coming down. I would hurt my family. I'd steal from them. I'd lie to them. I think they're out to get me or they're out to get my drugs. All that mattered was me and my drugs in any way I could get it.
Brought to you by the Arizona Meth Project.
What's up, what's up? This RB checking in, but the streets don't love you back. The movement is on, baby. Letting you know, me and LD, talking about that thug / drug life. Let me tell you a little lesson, players. In these streets, baby, they'll never love you back. Trust that.
In these streets. can touch you in these streets. Love if you want to, but know these streets, if they don't love you, they don't love you.
Everybody's around here talking about all that thug life, player. Talking about that drug dealing thing. Tell you, baby, it's about getting your life together, getting your head on tight, doing something with your life, and stop destroying your community, and stop destroying yourself, baby. But when the people come at you, they come for real, player. Homeboys on my team done got 400 million before, baby. 100 million, baby. Now they sitting on death row, baby. That's where you want to be, player? Because the drug game is washed up. The thug game is washed up, baby. They put it in our communities, baby, and they tell us off the top, yeah, you can make this, you can make that. But once they come for you, game over, lights out. Do what you feel, do what you want to do, baby, but join the movement. It's the streets, baby. They don't love you back. It's the streets, baby. They don't love you back. Come on, come on.
In these streets, no one's above you. In these streets, no one can touch you. In these streets, love
yeah, yeah.
If you want.
This track here is a track of knowledge, you feel me? Want all young brothers and sisters across America to understand that the drug game, the thug life, that's all washed up right now. Take heed, learn from players that done live that life, you feel me? Much love to my man, the real freeway Ricky Ross. Jeff Step down May 4th, we sending you much love out there to Cali, you feel me? Much love to everybody across state to state who roll with the movement. It's time to open your eyes up, people. It's time to rise up above all this street thing, you feel me? It's a better way. Let's do this.
It's moments like this when my back's against the fence that I say, fuck the fence. Life is just, I gotta go and get a bit. Got he caught up the moon. Shit, I'm strong. It started from my home, so I'm at home with brushes. Are we all alone when we born? We all alone when we die. We need to get our shit together. We can make it if we try. Can probably make it if you cry. But I hate it when you whine. And if all the truth is up, then you can take it when you die. I'm on my grind, cause all I got is time. But maybe it's enough. But if it's not, then let me know. Cause I feel like I'm on bus. I'm overstuffed with propaganda. This is slander. And lies, try to slick the public and then wonder why there's crimes and murders on the rise, cause we ain't got a dime. Shit, I'ma hurt some fucking body, you see it in my eyes. I lie awake sometimes at night and ponder how to get ahead, jump out of bed paranoid, I'm going backwards instead. Feel like my feet is full of lead, cause I just can't move, freestyle life off the head, cause I don't know what to do. I need to make a couple moves. Ooh, I need to make a couple moves. I need to make a couple moves, but I gotta stay free, cause each and everything I do and say affects my seed. Decide what's the truth, separated from fallacy. Separate what I want from the things that I need, and try to make a way for everything to be okay. Stay focused on my goals so you never stray away. Let the past be the past and your future's okay. Pay attention to the present, living in it every day. Come
now
on.
It's all be checking back in with you. Like I said, it's that trap of knowledge. Let you young brothers and sisters understand that, hey, the street life, that's a dead issue, that's a dead game, that's all washed up. Let's get our life together, let's do what we need to do, let's love more, hate none. RB, love, one, much love to Lucinda, my manager, and my man LD, let's do it, 100, out.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome right back here to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we back talking with my man Shaka tonight about his new book, Crack, and about his 19-year walk in state prison. You there, bro, Shaka?
I think we lost him. If you want to try to get him again, I can play another song and do a few announcements real quick.
Yeah, we can. We got another guest on the line. Carl, are you still on the line with us as well?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay, we got the call on the line. How you doing tonight, Carla?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
All right. Is this the young lady that I seen on Facebook and asked to call in?
Yes, it's me, Karen Lynn Duffy.
Okay.
Also from Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, that's great then, Ms. Duffy. Well, that's my wife, Lucinda, there, Ms. Duffy. And we're gonna set her up next week for a radio interview. And Ms. Duffy also has a book out as well. So I told her we'll set up next week. And her son was murdered. So I wanted to let her express her story to the public and also promote her book and her message as well, you know. And I asked her to join our movement site as well. So she'll be joining our movement site and spreading that message with us as well, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much. I truly appreciate the opportunity. I have checked out your website before, maybe a couple months ago and whatever, and I like what I was reading, and certainly I'm looking forward to an opportunity to address your audience and to talk about my journey and the message that I have for not just young people, but just everyone just
everybody.
In general.
Yes, ma'am. You know,
yes,
so,
absolutely.
We're waiting on the young man Shaka to call back. So we would just like for you to address a little bit about your son passing away and what led to that.
Oh, absolutely, I can do that. My son was killed 3 years ago, June 11th, 2007. His name is Courtney. I always like to say that his age, he's 22 and he's 26. 22, that's when he was murdered, and he's 26 because that's how old he'd be now. But he lost his life to a young man only 19 years of age, and he is now serving a life sentence here in the state of Michigan without the possibility of parole ever being a consideration. So the way I see it, he's scheduled to die in prison, and I know that he has to regret June 11th, 07, for sure. But what happened more specifically is that Courtney was summoned out to his death. He left my mom's house after we had a big birthday party there for my daughter. And Courtney left, drove up to the gas station. He was ambushed, and he lived for a few minutes. He was able to drive away. He died across the street at a utility pole, borderline Detroit and River Rouge. And his murderer became a fugitive for about 2 months, and he was apprehended on August 4th. And he obviously has been locked up ever since. Unfortunately, during his time of in fugitive status, he murdered another guy, I think just kind of desperate for money, and took that man's life, 30 years old, father of two. I guess since justice becomes the next step after, you know, such a tragedy, I have to say that it's bittersweet, but I'm glad that I have it. There's so many families that do not have any answers for what has happened to their son or daughter and the violence that had took their lives, took them away from this earth, took them away from their families, and, of course, they have no more hopes and dreams anymore. So it's a difficult struggle, but I did the book, not with the intentions to write a book initially. I just had this beautiful dream about Courtney about a month after he was killed, and I decided that I wanted to write it all down because I never wanted to forget anything about it. And a little bit of magic, I like to say, happened for me, and I started journaling. And I knew pretty much early on that it was something that I was going to continue doing, and I did. And after being so involved with it, small talk would come up about the book. So finally I consulted with another author, and it seems that she agreed, just from a professional standpoint, that I had something. So I put it all together. She decided after reading my first 10 pages that I was good by myself and to go ahead on and write. And write it alone, and I did, and it was published earlier this year, now available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com, what have you. And, yes, go ahead.
And what's the name of the book for the people?
The name of the book is Life Interrupted, and the subtitle is In the Aftermath of My Son's Murder, and I am the author, Karen Lynn Duffy. It's D-U-F-F-I-E. And the book is pretty much based around my journal. It's pretty raw and intense. I wrote the book straight from my heart. A lot of it is about Courtney's life, and a lot of it is about, certainly about what I've endured, about some of our court appearances and all the drama that went, that came about in the courtroom. You know, I just couldn't believe it, but.
It goes down like that. And, you know, I'm going to pass the mic over to my wife and let her ask you a few questions.
Sure.
Okay. No, I can't, you know, imagine what you went through, and I'm sorry that you had to go through that as a mother. You know, it's just got to, you know, tear your heart out.
Thank you.
You know, I commend you for writing the book and being able to put those feelings and emotions down on paper, because it's really hard for a lot of people to do. And I look forward to seeing the book and reading it.
I think it's a very good read. It's emotional. I think it's a good read. I had the unique opportunity earlier in June to speak at Eastern Michigan University to just kind of worked out this way. There's a group of grad students, and their focus was journaling. And the name of the class that they were in is Complicated Grief and Loss. And they had found out about me through my regular job, which I actually and ironically work in juvenile justice as my day job. And they came and asked me what I, you know, helped them with their presentation and, you know, come and be a guest speaker. And that was quite an experience, and I found out that a lot more about journaling than what I really knew, and a lot of things were also confirmed for me, and journaling is quite therapeutic. It truly is, and maybe not for everyone, but I certainly encouraged everyone in that class to give it a try, because it helped me, and although I did go to private counseling, I'm in and out of private therapy, I stick with group therapy, because I oftentimes find that I'm feeling pretty strong, and I try to attend some of the national organizations that I belong to, try to go there to help and support the other families who are new families coming in, and of course it's always tough for the families, again, who have no justice. They don't know what happened. All they know is that they had to bury their son or their daughter due to violence.
Right, right. And I ask you, Ms. Duffy, you work in the juvenile system. Do you work at the one over on Warren and Forest out there?
Actually, I work for a private agency, but we do have some county. We do have some contracts through Wayne County.
Yes.
So a lot of our thing, a lot of what we do is governed by the county.
Mm-hmm.
But interesting enough, the young man who murdered my son, I found out later that he was actually in our program in 2002. And that was interesting to me. That kind of, it scared me, because sometimes, and unfortunately, folks are just doing a job just to receive a paycheck. And
right.
I always think to myself, and I don't want to investigate because I don't want to know, how many
right.
cracks did this kid slip through without
get
really
back on the block?
Yep. And I tell the complete truth in my book. My son, he was attracted by the allure of fast money in the streets. I certainly don't try to glorify anything about Courtney's life, but what I do know is that the type of person that he was, and the thing about it is that there's just some other, that's what scares me about the streets, and I was just saying that to him about 2 weeks before he was killed. He was telling me about a situation, and I said, Courtney, please be careful, because sometimes being around other people can get you caught up in a situation, and my biggest fear for him was going to prison.
Mama,
I thought he'd get caught up in something.
We got my man Shaka back. We lost you for
okay.
a minute.
Yeah, I ain't know what happened, man. The phone just went blank. I thought it was still on commercial break.
Okay, my man. No, we started rapping to Miss Duffy. I see my man dipped off for a minute, you know. But hey, like we always do at the Streets Don't Love You Back Radio Show, we definitely have fun as well as delivering our message to the youth and others across America, you know. And we got two great people tonight that we've been talking to, Ms. Duffy and my man Shock out of Detroit. They both out of my hometown. And we back from the break, so I want you to finish talking about your book, Crack, and I want you to let people know also where to go pick that book up at in the city.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, like I was saying before we went to break, you know, my basic aim was to really write a very entertaining but very enlightening book about street culture, about the drug epidemic that just runs rapid in, you know, in cities like Detroit, Cleveland, Cincinnati, other spots, and to really just really drop those jewels of wisdom. That's why I named the company Drop a Gem, because instead of preaching to people, I just try to drop those little jewels of wisdom based on my experiences growing up in the streets, growing up in prison. And the book is available on our, you know, our website, www.dropagem.wordpress.com. You know, it can also be bought at several local stores throughout the Detroit area, Harlem World Video, out in Oak Park, Spectacles downtown. Can you picture this? It's at 7 Days West on Grand River and Greenfield, 90s Novice Cafe, as well as Hood Books, the Quinter, and 8 Mile, you know. So it's basically, you know, all the little local spots where urban books are sold is definitely available, you know. And then I deliver, you know, I'm like Domino's, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, the message is powerful.
Hey, don't make me laugh at you, man, because you know what, you took it all the way back, homeboy. You went all the way back. If you call me, I'm gonna drop that off at you, man. We ain't got to wait for a man next door, none of that. The car started already. Where you at?
No doubt. I mean, the message is serious, man. I mean, it's like I said, it's very... You know, it's a very good book, and basically what I'm trying to do is we have to start that conversation. You know, we really need to have real conversation about literacy, the importance of young people, you know, reading. And so, like I said, I wrote from a perspective that's going to grab their attention, but I'm dropping them jewels and showing that, you know, just because you start off one way don't mean you have to end that way. I'm living testimony to that, you know what I'm saying? I mean, my life could have easily... you know, took a whole nother path. I could have came back out here and been like, you know, like Devo, you know what I'm saying, on Friday, like, let me get that, and, you know.
Yeah, the world owe me something. Let me go get mine. Instead of coming back out teaching, you know what I mean, each one, you feel me? You came out with each one attitude, and you came out with a more positive attitude because you know that cage ain't what's happening. You feel me? It's about enlightening these kids. You did, and I'm proud of you to come home and have that mentality, because so many cats do come home with the mentality like everybody owe them something, and didn't nobody send me no money, so I'm going to take this out on the whole neighborhood. You know, give me mine.
Exactly. And you know what was deep, man? When I came back to Detroit, you know, I did my whole 19 years in every city in Michigan other than Detroit. And when I came...
Wow.
You know, when I rolled back to Detroit, man, you know, and I seen the devastation, I realized that I contributed to that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is what I tell people at my book signings, is like, you know, they say that we owe a debt to society, and I believe that. You know what I'm saying? I believe if you do, you know, if you do something that's causing somebody harm, cause somebody family harm, cause community harm, there is a debt that you have to pay to that community. But for 19 years, I was up there slaving for communities where people don't look like me. And I personally didn't feel like I owe them people up there nothing. I owe the people in Detroit who I harmed and whose community, you know, I ravaged. This is who I owe. So my debt to society didn't actually begin getting paid until I got out here and started sharing my story with young men and women who are on that path that I was on. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
my,
I'm paying my debt now. You know what I mean?
My man, and it's a continuous debt that we must pay, you know what I mean, to the neighborhoods and across America, you know, because when me and you was coming up back in the old days, you know, the other folks used to think it was a hood thing. No,
right.
It's a global thing, you feel me?
Exactly.
Back in the old days, they would just point out the hood. But the suburbs had always been coming to the hood to get their drugs, to get their party party situation. You know what I mean? So yeah, when it became in their area, then it was, oh my God, Lil Johnny is down there. Well, Lil Johnny's been coming down here. You just not figuring that out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the problem's been a global problem, and we must address it on a constant basis, and we must get these kids out here that don't read to know how to read and know how to understand what you're reading. Because if you don't know how to read, and if you don't know how to count, and if you don't know how to understand on what's going on around you, well, then you're a man or a woman that's just sitting on a standstill without even trying to move forward, you know? So that is the blessing. That is the blessing to have a person like you to come home after 19 calendars and you teaching these cats what's happening, man. So I want to just state on the show that I'm proud of you for coming out with that attitude, you know, to do just that, man, to give back to the global world, you know what I mean? Not just Detroit, not just downtown, uptown. The global message, because it's a global message out here to the streets don't love nobody back, and that's international.
Without a doubt, man. It's a blessing to have the community be willing to hear my message. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, there's a lot of people in the community that's hurting right now because their loved ones have been, you know, shot or killed or addicted to drugs, and sometimes they aren't open to guys who at one time was the ones contributing to that. And, you know, I've been fortunate and blessed, man, that the community really is embracing my story and what it is I'm trying to accomplish, you know?
Right. Well, the community, they look for someone to stand up, to say, hey, we do have a problem here. Hey, we do need to address this. Hey, we do need to fix this problem. Hey, we do need to get people out here doing the right thing. We do need to stop little Johnny down the street from selling dope out the crack house down there. We need to shut that down, you know what I mean? We do need to do this, you know what I mean? Yeah, it ain't no we gonna run in the house and little Johnny still down the street. We scared to talk. No, that was way back in the 60s, pimp. We done overcame, you feel me? Martin Luther King done already went to that march, you know? We done overcame. In this era of life, we as the people, whether you're man, woman, boy, or girl, we as the people must address what's happening now. Because like they say, closed mouth don't get fed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. In order to feed the next man or the next woman, you have to share that knowledge with them for them to share that knowledge with someone else. And that's where the each one teach one come in at.
Exactly.
Well, you have to have people that actually walk their talk. There's a lot of people that get out here and say what should be done, but they're not out on the streets talking to these young people, you know, giving them hope and showing them how to do it and, you know, helping them through it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, definitely.
You made a comment in your bio that in prison it was an environment of hopelessness and despair. And, you know, and it's still like that for some people in the hood.
People
still doing what you guys did 20 years ago, 30 years ago, still selling drugs because they've got to eat or they've got to feed their children. There's still so many people out there that are trying to make ends meet, and that's the only way they know because that's the way their parents did it. That's the way their grandparents did it. And unfortunately, that's the way it is. But what can you tell these kids by your experience and being in prison? Because, you know, a lot of kids think that, well, going to prison is cool. It means that you're a tough guy, that you're that guy. Well, what can you tell them, though, about the reality of being locked up in prison and not having that freedom? What
I try to do, you know, I try to take a different approach. I know most people come out, you know, they try to scare the youth, like, man, yeah, you don't want to go in there, they're going to rape you, they're going to abuse you, they're going to beat you. And what I realized, you know, from walking these blocks, man, you know, these children out here facing other children with AK-47s and, you know, guys on ecstasy pills. So what's in there is nowhere near as scary as what they're experiencing out here. So I really try to take a different approach that's more in tune with them respecting their humanity, you know what I'm saying, and really having a sense of value for what it really means to be free, which is really to wake up and not be in service to somebody else against your will, you know what I'm saying? And so what I try to do is I try to inspire the natural genius and the children that I encounter, because that's some of the things that people are feeling in. Like, we fail to realize that the children that's in our midst today, they're hurting. A lot of them have been forsaken. A lot of them have been abandoned. A lot of them have been abused. So I try to speak to those issues to help them really navigate their way through the turmoil and discord they may be experiencing in their household that leads them out into the streets. You know what I'm saying? So I found that method to be far more effective than trying to scare them about prison, you know, because,
exactly.
You know, when you go into, you know, one of the things I write about and one of the pieces that I write is the contradictions I saw inside prison. For example, with the bathroom breakdown in prison, you know, they're going to fix that bathroom within 5 minutes. But a bathroom breakdown in one of our schools out here in the community, that bathroom might not get fixed for 5 years. You know what I'm saying? And to me, that speaks to where the politicians, the community activists, and the people's interest really is that they're not caring about our children to invest in them, but they wouldn't invest in prison. And so to me, that's really backwards, you know?
Right.
Exactly, you know? And anything, Ms. Duffy, you would like to ask Mr. Shaka?
I just want to say that I believe that we're on, if you will, I don't know, disrespect or anything, but if I understand correctly, you went to prison for 19 years with it because you committed a murder?
Yes, it was. It was second-degree murder.
Second-degree murder, okay. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say that just being sort of, I guess you could say, on opposite ends of that, because my son was murdered, and that's what my book is about, I just want to say that I totally appreciate what you're doing and coming out of prison and speaking to these young people about what's really going on in the streets and in prison. And has sort of been my message too, as because I think that a lot of them, these young people, they have it so wrong, and they think that, I guess the biggest thing to me is that you can't get it back. And I heard you say something similar to that earlier in the interview, is that because when they're dead, they really are dead. And that was like one of the hardest things that it took for me to get through my head, that, you know, I thought that, well, maybe the guy, he was a fugitive for a couple months, and when they called me and they said, okay, we caught him tonight, and I was like, okay, yeah, and I was still waiting on something else to happen, because I think I kept in the back of my head that Courtney's coming back too. Okay, they would have caught him, but there's something else happened for Courtney, but no, nothing else happens for Courtney. The young man that took my son's life, he has a natural life sentence, so he's not ever coming home. And as I don't know if you heard this part of the interview, but I said earlier that he also took another guy's life while he was in fugitive status. And I just believe that was just for money. I think that he was just desperate for money. But I just want to say that I really commend you, and I'm happy about the fact of what you're doing and about your book and the progress that you're making and what you're doing in the community. And like you're saying, you know, giving back and doing all that you can do to save another person and to get some of these young guys to listen. I was talking to a friend of mine, and he was just saying that after I had a big book signing that was hosted by the Detroit Public Library back in June, and it was more of like a community forum and a dinner, and it was so nice. And a lot of folks come out to talk, and a friend of mine, he said that he was really moved by everything that had happened. He said on his way home, he was riding his motorcycle, he saw a group of young guys. He said he decided to pull over and just try to talk to them, because he was really just moved by the whole emotion of the evening and what had happened at the program. And he said the scariest thing about it, I thought he was going to tell me something positive at the end of the story, but he didn't. What he said to me was that these young guys, like 14 and 15 years old, he said they had a blank stare in their eye, and that basically their whole thing was they're going to kill somebody before they get them. And
what?
No matter what he was saying to them, he's trying to tell them about what had just transpired over at the library and how, you know, what you might think that this is the good way to go. You don't want to go to prison. You don't want to destroy yourselves. You don't want to destroy your life. You don't want to destroy your family's life. Because your family, my motto is this, is that murder is never just between two people. It's not. There's no way in the heck that what happened on June 11th, 07th, just was left between Courtney and his murderer, his killer.
Well,
it has totally devastated my entire family. And for the offender as well. Look at his family, what they have to go through.
Lost him as well, yeah.
Yeah, Ms. Duffy, I definitely want to say I really extend my heartfelt condolences to you and your family. You know, it's never no any excuse, and I think one of the things that allowed me to be the man that I am today is that I never made any excuses for the action I chose to take on that particular night. You know, as a 19-year-old, emotionally confused young man, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the interview where I actually shared my story, what led up to the actual murder. And, you know, and I know every situation, every circumstance is different. However, there's, you know, no circumstance that justifies the taking of another human's life. And, you know, so I really, my sympathy is with you and your family, you know, and you know, your grieving process is, you know, that's going to be a lifelong journey because the reality is that, you know, that's an integral part of your life. But what I really believe, you know, when you meet children with those blank stares and you meet young people who decide to carry guns and who decide to use those guns without thought for the long-term consequences, is that those are children who have been deeply hurt, deeply bruised. One of the things that really allowed me to work through the things that I needed to work through in order to really change the direction and the course of my life was really to analyze all of the things that happened to me as a child. And then I started talking to other guys who, you know, were serving time for similar crimes, and I just realized that most of us came from some of the most horrendous backgrounds imaginable. And sometimes, you know, as adults, we ignore the signs that we see in children, whether it's our child or other children. We ignore some of the deep-rooted hurts that exist in a large segment of our society today. We ignore all the other things that kind of aid and fosters the growth of these negative traits. For example, you know, we see teenagers standing outside liquor stores being sold alcohol by adults. We have all these stores in our community. You know, you're from Detroit, so you ride past the liquor stores and the beer and wine stores where these people think nothing of selling alcohol to our children. The fact that guns get into the hands of so many teenagers and children with such ease is alarming, you know, especially when we live in a society as militarily sophisticated as we do, you know, yet, you know, nobody can curtail the violence that continues to take place and take shape in our community. And so it's really our responsibility, those who have been victims, those who have been perpetrators of violent crime, who have transformed their lives, it's our responsibility to work in concert to really raise awareness about the deep-rooted issues, you know, not just the effect, because sometimes that's what we get lost in, the effect, and we forget that there's a deeper cause. And, you know, if we can work together to really raise awareness, I think we can really effectuate a profound change in our community, and that's what I'm willing to do. If it's a program that you have, I can come speak at, I can come speak, you know, to the children, the youth, whatever. You know, I'm always available. You know, that's my responsibility to the community, and, you know, that's what I'm open to doing.
Well, that's excellent. And I don't know if you caught that part of my interview, if you were still disconnected, but I was saying to Rob and his wife is that I work in juvenile justice, and I've been trying to. I've been really busy. And my daughter was just married a couple weeks ago, so there's been a lot going on with me personally, but I'm trying to get back into thank you. And then I injured myself, so I've been I'm not even working this week. I was supposed to speak with a football team yesterday, but what I'm hoping to do in my own job is to speak more with folks that the staff that work directly with at-risk youth. Because all the kids in our program have been adjudicated, and some of them for serious offenses already, and many of them, I work as a database analyst, but I see all of their files that come across my desk for various reasons I have to read, and that was something else that I was going to say to you is that it is something that I see a whole lot, the family dynamics, social dynamics, lack thereof. And I know for sure, too, with the young man, I'm not saying that it justifies anything, but I believe that it plays a role in morals and values and standards and this kind of thing. But the young man who took my son's life, he comes from a very dysfunctional environment where his parents were not around. He was left on the grandmother, who was a crack addict.
Mm-hmm.
And she was overburdened with all of her children who are all using drugs. They're all narcotic abusers. They're all using drugs. And they're leaving their kids on her. And she's also abusing drugs. So it's a bad situation, you know. But, again, I'm really happy that you're able to come out and that you have another chance at life. You know, I believe in second chances and definitely in redemption and this kind of thing. I have to say, in all fairness and all honesty to myself, and I'm still working on the forgiveness thing with the guy who did this to my son. Because it's so senseless, so incredibly senseless. But I'm still working on that part of it. I haven't gotten there yet. I'm not wanting what you say really angry. I really don't give a lot of thought to him. And I know some people maybe find it hard to believe. I actually have learned how to separate thoughts. Like right now I'm standing in front of my son's urn here at home. I had him cremated. You know, I stand here in front of his urn, and I can look at him, and I know that he's not here, and I know what happened to him. But I've learned how to just separate where I can think about Courtney all day long, but the thought of the guy who pulled the trigger never comes up so much. And when it does, it doesn't really bother me. But I know still that, you know, that's something that I'm going to have to deal with, and I think that that's slowly coming.
Right.
You know, have you ever had any communication?
Don't be a lifetime. Yeah, like Soccer says, don't be a lifetime struggle with you, because that wasn't just your cousin or your uncle. That was your child who you carried for 9 months.
My firstborn son, I looked at him in that casket and I say, well, dang, he used to be an infant, and this was a whole lot of work I put into him. And for him just to be gone just like that, that was devastating for me to see him in that casket. That's the worst. It's the worst. It's like a torture. Sometimes it eat at me all day long. I just have to just go to prayer, go to the Lord in prayer, because I can't take it sometimes, you know. And that's,
we definitely going to keep you up in prayer, Sister Duffy, you know, with that whole situation and with what's going on, you know, because once again, like Shaka said, it's a lifetime struggle when a woman has a child and then a child is took away from her. You know, like you said, you can replace a stolen bike. You can replace $50 that was stolen yesterday, but you can't replace a life. That's something you can't replace, and you can't put a price on life. You know what I mean? So that's why I indicate to kids all the time when I speak as well that you have to understand when you pull that trigger, when you go out here to harm somebody, it's consequences with that. You ain't finna just sit down and chill and kick your feet up and say, I'm finna live up back and dream. Now it's a lot go with that program you just chose, you know, and it's not
that's
all
right.
good. You
that's
know?
Right.
So that is the mission we all on here tonight and beyond tonight, you know, because it's a vital mission globally, like I said, because everybody wants to be this guy. But we don't sit down enough to hear what these kids say sometimes, unless you're a guy or a woman who's done lived that actually street life and went through that grindstone. Now you're able to listen to this young man or this young lady, because God has spared your life to be one of his messengers to carry out the message through the land and listen to his kids. And see, that's what people get it twisted at. When you don't listen and you don't hear and you don't understand, well, the game get all twisted and you ain't listening, and the child is already telling you, I'm hurting. I'm about to get out of control. I'm about to go out here and do something wrong. But you so trying to pamper little Johnny and little Susie, but you ain't even just listening to what they just said. I'm going to go out here and trip. You know, you missed that subject. You know what I mean? So we have to be more clear at what we're hearing out here and help our kids more, you know, because some kids can be helped. Some have to be helped a little bit more, But if you sit down and pay attention to children out here that done lived the shock of life, done lived wild boy life, done lived the devastation of Miss Duffy and other people among the world, you know, we'll get a lot more clear at what's happening out here in America.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And, Rob, we do have another caller on the line, and we want to give them the opportunity to either ask a question or make a comment if they would like.
Good.
And their area code is also 313. Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, 300. She on the air. You there, caller? Yeah, they probably just listening in.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, they probably just listening in. So we're going to go back to my man, Shaka, and we're going to ask you, Shaka, you know, what advice do you give these young kids, you know what I mean, the young women and the young men, what advice do you give them out here for trying to keep them away from the gate and stay focused on the education and things? What advice you give them?
Yeah, one of the things I try to do anytime I mentor children, and one of the things I wish that really would have been done for me is I try to find out what it is that they truly love, what it is they're attracted to. And sometimes I think as parents, as educators, as mentors, we sometimes project what our goals is for the child onto them as opposed to really tapping into what it is that they're really good at, what it is that they really have a desire to do. And you have to really empower children today. Most of our children are feeling powerless, and this is one of the things that kind of has led to this epidemic of carrying and brandishing guns, because it's a certain sense of empowerment that comes with that. And I think we have to empower our children intellectually. We have to empower them spiritually, mentally, and really, I just try to get them to always put themselves in other people's shoes, and if we really can tap into helping them understand the importance and the power of empathy, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and asking that question like, would you want that done to you? I think that's one of the things that can really transform their thinking. And I just try to meet them where they are. You know, I listen to the current hip-hop, you know, even the things that may not be suitable to my particular taste. I stay tuned in to whatever the new current fashion is. And I really just embrace their uniqueness, you know, and that's important. You know, that's important to children. It's important for us to really listen to and value their point of view. As adults, sometimes we think we had the whole world figured out, and we don't realize we're still learning. And that sometimes our children can be a lot smarter than us in areas and in ways that we haven't really given consideration to. And, you know, it's important for us to bring that about. And then entrepreneurship, especially for children growing up in the urban community, we really have to empower them when it comes to understanding how to build a life for themselves in an honest way. You know what I'm saying? And so all those things are very important.
My man. And I just want to thank you for that great, great message right there, Brother Shaka, you know. And I want you to let the people know once again where to go get that great book, Crack At, and give them your website. And if you got any book signings coming up, I would like for you to, you know, let the people know where they can get with you at, and continue the great message on to the people.
Thank you. Yes, this Saturday, August the 14th, 2010, I'll be signing books and sharing my story at Can You Picture This at 15370 Grand River, which is inside 7 Days West, right there on Grand River, Greenfield. That's from 1 to 3 p.m. From 4 to 7 p.m., I'll be at Spectacles, which is in downtown Detroit, at 230 East Grand River. And the book is always available at www.dropagem.wordpress.com, or you can call me 313-720-5546. I also blog, which I write about my personal life, my journey in prison, at www.shakasengor.blogspot.com. Shaka Sengor is S-H-A-K-A-S-E-N-G-H-O-R. And, you know, I'm available for speaking engagements. I'm available for mentoring programs. If you're just listening in, you just got, you know, a child, a nephew, a niece, a brother, somebody you just want me to kick it to or talk to, you know, just give me a call at the number 313-720-5546.
My man. Okay, right. You got that, Ms. Duffy? You got that wrote down, Ms. Duffy?
Yes, I was trying to catch that. 313-720-5546.
Right, that's my man.
What's Shaka's number?
Yeah, that's his number. And you know, y'all both right there in the city, Ms. Duffy. So y'all both get together, you dig, and start spreading that message together, you know, because everybody must be together. Like I said, each one teach one, you know. And it was our blessing tonight.
We've met quite a few people that are doing, you know, the same thing that we're all trying to do. And what we need to set up maybe something up in Detroit here in maybe the next few months or this next year, some kind of a big rally where, you know, all of you can talk and we have some music and really try to reach out to the kids. And
absolutely,
and
that'd be great.
Yeah, that's something that you might can plan up there in the city, Ms. Duffy, and we can have a great panel, you know what I mean, of guys who God done spared their life and saved their life to spread his message across the world. Because, see, this is how I look at my life, because I grew up right there on the east side of Detroit. I was born on Gallister Street between Garfin and Ford. But at the age of 10, I moved over by Van Eyck and Harbor. You know, that's when I got involved with the Bishop Gang and all of that, you know, around Kettering area and all of that, you know, and led my life to other things in the game, you know. And, you know, God changed my life around, you know. So my story's been deep coming from the city of Detroit, you know. So we must give back to where we came from. We must put this big panel together because it's a lot of cats in Detroit that's authors, that's done their time in the prison system, that's out here trying to do the right thing and give back to the kids and give back to the community, but they're just not being tapped into and reached out to, you know what I mean, because people overlook at what they should be looking at and looking at what they shouldn't be looking at, you know what I mean? So
we have to
pay close attention to the man and woman that's trying to help versus the man or woman that's just walking around with gold chains on their neck, smelling good and looking good. You know what I mean? Because that ain't helping the community at all.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, we got to get together and do this thing real good. And I want to make an announcement. If y'all don't know about this, Ms. Duffy, it's supposed to be a book fest up in that Nova, I believe. I believe it's up in Nova, Michigan, up there in October. But I'll find that information, and I'll email that information to you and Shaka because it's right up there in the city. And I think it's in October, Shaka. I'll email you that information, and that might be something y'all want to hit as well because it's supposed to be a big thing up there.
Okay.
Oh,
well,
I've got to get in with Adra and Kristen, too, from the Live Ladies of Literature. I mean, they're all over the city, and, you know, they both they both work at high schools with the youth and stuff like that, but they have, you know, several places where they promote books and the different coffee houses and stuff, and, you know, they're just all over the city.
She's a school teacher, and I'll let her know about you, Shaka, and Ms. Duffy's books as well. She's done been on our show a couple of times, and she's a school teacher up there in Michigan, and she has a book out to her and a friend. So it's about just networking real heavy there in the city, you know, because our town needs it real bad right now of all the things that's going on in the city, you know, and the turmoil that's taking place up there, you know. So we must get this movement deep in the streets, deep-rooted in the streets up there, and help all who we can help and all who are willing to listen, you know, and guide them down that right path in life, man. And you and Ms. Duffy got a lot to bring to the table. I have a lot to bring to the table, and a lot of other people out of Detroit and global has a lot to bring to the table to help around the world as well, you know?
We actually just developed a comprehensive 6-week, 12-session mentoring program, and I, you know, we're really still working out the defined details. But what it does is I take like some of my most personal writing, dealing with the child abuse, dealing with, you know, the drug culture, dealing with inner city violence, And week by week, we kind of break down and we give children an opportunity to write their own experiences, because I think that's one of the most empowering things for me that I experienced was when I actually started journaling. I actually started writing about all the things I experienced, and it basically freed me. You know, it freed me in a way that them opening the prison doors never could. And
exactly.
This is something that I love sharing with all of you, and I think it's very empowering. It's a very comprehensive program, and so we had that available as well. So, you know, for people who got my number, they can call and ask about that, and I'll provide more information to provide for, you know, and this is, it's you know, it's suitable. You know, I could tailor it to fit any particular crowd of youth, you know what I'm saying, whether it's religious-based, non-religious-based, you know, the most hood to the suburbs, you know, because all our children are relevant and all of them are important and all of them really need to hear these profound messages.
My man. And that's a great one. And, yeah, my missus does the announcements. So you can do the announcements about my book signings and my speaking engagements in the school system now before we get off the air.
All right. Well, Rob's going to be speaking to five different classes at Apollo High School here in Phoenix, Arizona, August 25th. And then on August 28th, we have a book signing at Bent Cover Books. The address is 12428 North 28th Drive in Phoenix, Arizona, and that will be from 1 to 4. And then we also have a book signing in September, but we'll update you on that a little bit down the road. We do also have several new T-shirts out, caps, of course, our book, and then we have the soundtrack out as well, The Streets Don't Love You Back. So go to the website, and you can order anything from there that you like. And Shaka and Mustafi, just so that you know, if you have a profile on our website, you can also put your events up there. And once your events are on there, you can put them through Facebook. You can share them through any of the websites, Facebook, MySpace, Google, Twitter, whatever.
Okay.
So that's getting your information about your book out there as well.
Oh, great. Yeah. Okay. I believe I am registered to your website, but I'll double-check all that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and make sure you put your book up there, like I say, and any events, you know, like the wife said, and all that will go out. And you do the same thing, so I could put your profile up there, which you joined. We appreciate that. Put your picture up there, you know, pick up your book, and all the information, or if you got any speaking engagements like the ones you got coming up, you always start putting that up on the movement page, because we have a lot of people that come to our page. You know, it's already over 80,000 people that done come to our page and steady grow, you know what I mean, that visit our page, you know.
No doubt, I definitely do that.
Yeah, I just want to say to all my Detroiters out there is that, you know, I thank God for saving my life and blessing me to be here to share my story and my message as well. And I want to always thank the Charles H. Wright Afro-American History Museum down on East Warren for honoring me May 3rd, you know what I mean, into the museum. So I'm very honored to be in my hometown museum, you know. So
that's wow.
Yeah, so anybody in Detroit, you know what I mean, that would, you know, like to go see the book, my book is in the rare book section at my hometown museum, you know, and it's also at Detroit Library, you know what I mean, down on Woodward Avenue. And the book is in several libraries across the country and growing. So the message is spreading global, and we just like to always thank everybody who follow our radio show, who follow our movement, and we just like to thank everybody for tuning in tonight. And had a pleasure of my man Shock out of Detroit, my hometown, and we also had the pleasure of Ms. Duffy getting her message out there as well. But you're still going to hear from her next week. She was just filling in until Shaka got back on the wire, you dig? So that's what that was about. But the message was great on all ends tonight, and I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and Shaka for coming on, and Ms. Duffy. Any last words, babe?
No, not for me. Go ahead, Ms. Duffy.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that I would definitely will be seeing Shaka this Saturday over at his book signing. I'll come to the first one between 1 and 3. Absolutely, I'll be there.
Mama, man, You see, I got work, Brother Shaka.
Oh, no doubt, no doubt. I'm definitely looking forward to working with Miss Duffy. I thank her for sharing her story. And, you know, I definitely sure me and her be able to collaborate on something that'll be impactful to our youth in the city. So I'm definitely looking forward to meeting, man. I really appreciate y'all inviting me and welcoming me on the show. I love what y'all doing and whatever I can contribute to it. Without a doubt, you know you got it. So I'll be calling in next week. I should be freed up. Call in just to, you know, get my, you know, listen to Miss Duffy share her story. And man, y'all continue to do what y'all do, man. I really appreciate it. And I get the profile stuff up real soon.
My man, and if you got any guys, you know, that you work with, Shaka, that would like to be on the radio show that's changed their life and is out here helping the youth as well, you refer them to us, you know, and we'll get them on the show ASAP, you know. And also, I know you can't travel just yet, but if you can make a DVD clip for me, and we can still put that on both our TV shows, you know.
Okay,
and I'll email you that information on your email, how to go about doing that, because you will make two drops for the Change Reality show and then for our Keep It Real show, you know.
Okay.
And that's how we'll work that. And we'll also do the same with you, Ms. Duffy, because me and my wife have two TV shows we produce as well.
Oh, okay. Wow, awesome.
Yeah, and both our shows hit 1.5 million households. So you're hitting 3 million households, you know, down in Ohio. That's where our show airs at, all through Ohio. So both shows are estimated 3 million households per week. You know, both shows play three times per week.
Wow, that's excellent.
So, yeah, definitely. I definitely have a great idea for a show because I am connected with a lot of brothers who have came out and turned their lives around. So I'm going to collaborate with them and get all them to contact you. And we'll do a show, you know what I'm saying, you know, just a brother circle, you know, talking about what we've been doing, just kind of put a different face on brothers who turn their lives around. So we definitely going to put that together. You know, it's been beautiful working with y'all, and, you know, let's do it.
No doubt, man. Hey, let's make it happen, man. And like I said, I email you all that, how to go about doing it. And I just want to give a shout-out to your family, Shaka, give a shout-out to your family, Ms. Duffy, and God bless everybody tonight. And like we always say, the streets don't love you back. Until next time.
No doubt.
Next week, we'll have Mrs. Duffy back next week to tell her story on air next week. So please join us for that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I look forward to it.
Have a great evening, everyone.
Y'all too.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah. LD. You know, far too often, we look back in hindsight and wish, say, I wish I just had one more chance. This is it. This is it. That second chance. Feeling like a good scream once I realize that I'm still here. And sometimes these regrets won't let me forget that I done let down the rest of my years. But you can see the drive in my eyes and the hidden surprise, because I haven't first come to see. And with my tears in the sky high, so the sunshine, life is on the line with no place to see. And I'm in need of a change, maybe from the inside out. That these two awful strangers trying to shut my mouth. I done seen a lot of things that I've never talked about. If I could do it all again, I'd never let them in my house. I done made some mistakes, apologize and reconcile. I done changed all my ways from what I was as a child. Stood on my mama's great rain pour down from the clouds. Dropped to my knees and prayed I'd have a reason to smile. Running around any street, chasing girls, thought I learned all the world had to teach. But one day I lied awake, realized I didn't know it. And it hit me like a brick, wish I could do it all again. But I can't, and I ain't anyway. I read and brave, write my future like a book. As I turn another page, as the lights go down, I walk across the stage, rub the law full up. But more importantly, I pray that everything will be okay. And somehow I know it is. All I gotta do right now is get through this bullshit. Keep
my chin to the sky when my back's against the wall. Fuck out, I will fight, fight, scratch, and claw. And still stand tall in the belly of the beast. Be afraid of nothing in this world, we got to be. Sometimes I feel slip if I forget my sleep, but that's why I hit my knees soon as I lose the sheet. No more waiting. Life is not a game. Sometimes you might not get a second chance. Life is too short. Cherish what you got. Don't be jealous of others. Do for your damn self.